97.1 FM Talk Podcast.
I'm not a Mary, the sweetheart.
Goodness sake, kid. Keep your voice down. Your father's listening to the radio.
I'm not a Mary, the sweetheart.
This is the Annie Fry Show.
Friday. Welcome to the Annie Fry Show. Thank you for being with us this afternoon. We are going to dip in right now to the press conference with the acting Secret Service Director, Ronald Rowe. He's delivering a message right now on the coverage that we have seen or not seen of former president and candidate Donald Trump. Let's listen into the Secret Service right now. All right. It sounds like we don't have the audio here. Let's make sure that we can. I want to make sure that we understand that this is a press conference that is delivering from Washington, D.C. Here he is, Ronald Rowe, right now. Let's listen in.
The technology and personnel needed to meet these new.
The failure on the part of the United States Secret Service.
The paradigm shift will be a driving force to move the Secret Service from a state of reaction to a state of readiness. And the vision is for the Secret Service to be more agile, with the ability to escalate protection to the highest levels for numerous protectees for undetermined periods of time. But in order to do this, we need additional personnel, technical assets, and equipment for the sustainment of immediate and future needs. Our personnel have been in a state of hypervigilance following July 13th. We are certainly working our people hard, and I've used this term publicly, redlining. This cannot be about working our people harder. So with respect to changes, the workforce, the American public, they can expect changes in our processes for advances. There will be an increased use of technology, not only to assist in communications, but also situational awareness when we're doing our protective mission. There will be organizational changes. For example, I've already directed the creation of an applied research and development section to field new technologies, leverage the research of other government agencies, and calibrate our technical security assets to stay ahead of threat vectors and technical collection impacting Secret Service equities. This will be an iterative process, meaning it will be constantly evaluated, validated, updated, and evolving. We cannot be stagnant, and we must be weaned off the reliance of partners within DHS to assist us during high operational times. The Secret Service should be self-reliant outside of national special security events. However, we recognize that we will always need assistance from our partners within the Department of Homeland Security and our partners at the Department of Defense. And I want to take this moment now also to thank you, to thank our workforce. I want to conclude by thanking the men and women of the Secret Service who are working tirelessly. This summer, we experienced an unprecedented operational tempo for our agency. Within a 45-day period, the Secret Service successfully implemented our operational security planning at three national special security events, the NATO Summit, the Republican National Convention, and the Democratic National Convention. We successfully protected both the presidential debate in Philadelphia and multiple protective visits commemorating the anniversary of the September 11th attacks. All of this took place while protecting major party candidates on the campaign trail. This high operational tempo continues as the Secret Service prepares for the United Nations General Assembly next week, where we expect to protect more than 140 visiting world leaders and heads of state. I am proud of all that we've accomplished in a very difficult and tumultuous time for the agency. And I recognize and thank the men and women of the Secret Service and their families for continuing to make great sacrifices in support of our enduring mission. And with that, I will take questions.
We'll go with Kelly O'Donnell with NBC News.
Director, given all of the attention and scrutiny related to these events,
sir, given all the attention and scrutiny related to these events, do you believe your highest level protectees will now need to campaign differently in how they organize their events and in how they live their daily lives, things like trips to golf courses or recreational time? Will they have to live differently in order to be safe?
Well, ultimately, Kelly, it's the responsibility of the Secret Service to make sure that we provide
a secure environment for our protectees. We want them to make sure that they can live their lives with some type of normalcy, but they must do so with us providing the highest levels of protection, which we have been doing since July 13th. And so it's ultimately our responsibility to make sure that wherever our protectees go, we are creating a safe environment. And that comes back to us being able to use our methodologies, to use our redundancies, our systems that we have in place to create those secure environments.
Do they need to campaign differently still? Outdoor events, that kind of thing.
So since July 13th, we have been securing successfully outdoor events. And what you're seeing is an increased use of assets, increased use of ballistic glass. So we certainly make sure that when we're when they are out there in an outdoor venue, that we are using our protective methodologies to create that safe environment.
Go to Maria Cicchetti, Washington
Post. Hello, Director. Thank you for taking the time. Could you just kind of go into a bit more detail about the conversations you had with Trump campaign staff about the selection of the Butler site? The report says that Secret Service agents saw it as a challenge, and staff wanted to have the rally there. Did the staff go against your recommendation? Can you speak to exactly what was said and what the outcome was?
So. Listen, the staff chooses a site, and ultimately it's on the Secret Service to secure it. So when the site was selected, the advance team went about identifying areas of concern. The AGR building was one of those hazards that was identified. But let me just be clear, Maria. Ultimately, it is the Secret Service's responsibility to secure a site. We certainly have conversations, and it doesn't matter whether it's a campaign staff or a White House staff. We have conversations, and we have very good working relationships with those staffs. But ultimately, it is the Secret Service's responsibility to secure a site.
Your comments?
Director, thank you. Based on your review and analysis, what is the reason, what's the best explanation for why there was not law enforcement personnel covering the roof, physically on the roof itself, or making sure someone could not get on top of the roof? And the follow-up question would be, how disappointed are you in what you described as deficiencies in diligence?
Sure. So ultimately, Pierre, we have to be very direct and clear when we're talking to our state and local counterparts. With respect to Butler, I think what the Mission Assurance Review has identified is that there was that lack of clarity. I can tell you since July 13th, when I've been out on the road and I've watched field offices and I gave guidance upon becoming the acting director to the field, we have to be very clear when we're talking to our state and local partners. We value those relationships with them. We need them to be assisting us and be shoulder to shoulder with us. And it appears that there was that lack of clarity with respect to Butler. And go again with your follow-up here.
On that, so there was a lack of clarity that that roof should be secure, period, full stop.
There was a discussion about how the roof was going to be secured, and I think what it came back to is we should have challenged how that mechanism was being implemented, meaning we should have been more direct. We cannot be overly deferential to state and local law enforcement. Ultimately, it's our responsibility, and so we just have to be very clear when we're asking them for support. They want to help us, and what we found is that in this, they in the mission assurance interviews, it became apparent that in comparison to prior visits to that area, there was one prior visit in 2020, that there was a lack of assertion with respect to what exactly state and locals would have to require or would be required to support that advance.
And the third question, simply, how disappointed are you when you see that, as the report states, that some personnel did not follow Secret Service protocols?
Well, I'm not going to get into employee disciplinary matters, but what I can tell you is the men and women of the Secret Service are dedicated professionals. And so while July 13th is a failure, we're not proud of it, but we certainly have been rising to this moment. The men and women in the field are rising to this moment. They are working tirelessly to make sure that the people we protect are safe. And so I will never be disappointed in our folks. I am proud of this agency. I am proud of our people.
Brian Lee Sullivan, your time.
Hi. Thanks so much for doing this.
On the question of the AGR buildings, is there a process that's standard for the day of the event that somebody from the Secret Service looks around and makes sure all of the assets are where they are? And since the roof of the AGR building was such a glaring omission, why didn't anybody raise that issue at the time? Or, secondly, in the security room, look and say, I don't see any local police in here. How are we going to hear them?
Right. And I think that was a failure to challenge our assumptions, the assumption that local police were going to have more of a presence in that AGR building. Getting back to your question, there is that diligence that has to be done by the site agents to make sure that, hey, all of the assets are in place. And so there was an assumption that they had it covered, but they're clearly...
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof like Aloe, Allbirds, or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling and for shoppers buying simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet and the not so secret secret with Shop Pay that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going. So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell whenever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout experience as business powerhouses like Aloe, Allbirds, and Skims. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
Was not that follow-up to make sure.
But is there a process that you look around and like a punch list and check it off and...
It is part of the principles of our advance and our protective methodologies.
Okay. And secondly, just to follow up on the campaign question, you said it's ultimately the Secret Service's responsibility. So when there's a disagreement between the campaign and the Secret Service on a security issue, who has the last word?
So it's not about disagreement. It's about a negotiation. They certainly don't want any harm to come to their principal. And so they respect us. And so usually what it boils down to is escalating it up to a supervisor and a senior staff level. What I can tell you is that if there were discrepancies, and there were, regarding how the site was supposed to have been secured, how supervisors were briefed, and supervisors reported in their mission assurance interviews that they envisioned harder assets to be able to secure that line of sight, to be able to mitigate anything that might have been looking in or would have created an openness on the site at the Butler Farm Show. And so on the morning of, if there were those deficiencies, they were never escalated up to the supervisors to be able to resolve.
David Sponge, Fox News.
Thank you, sir. I have two questions. They're related. The first is looking forward. The House just voted within the last couple of hours unanimously from those that were present in the chamber to give presidential candidates the exact same Secret Service protection as sitting presidents. My first question is, can you handle that?
We've been doing that since July 13th, David.
So what is the purpose of the bill?
I don't know. You'd have to ask members of Congress that. What I can tell you is that when I say the highest levels of Secret Service protection, the former president is getting tactical assets. He's getting everything that the former president, that the current president has with respect to Secret Service assets.
And that was my second question. Can you explain that former President Trump is getting the same protection as President Biden and Vice President Harris? Because a lot of members of Congress on Capitol Hill are skeptical about that. There's a lot of talk saying clearly he didn't have the same protection, because if he did, the golf course would have been secure in West Palm Beach. Can you tell people what's going on with that?
So with respect to West Palm Beach, what I can tell you without getting into our TTPs, our techniques, our tactics, our procedures, what I can tell you is that on that day, there were counter-sniper elements that were present with the former president on the golf course in proximity. There was an entire counter-assault team that was there in proximity. There was also a jump team in proximity. The advance agent who was part of the first element, whose goal was to sweep ahead, did his job. That young man is a very young agent, early in his career. His vigilance, his reaction is exactly how we trained and exactly what we want our personnel to do. He identified a threat, an individual with a long gun, and he made swift decisions and took a swift action to be able to mitigate that. No shot was fired at the former president. The former president was not exposed to where he was on the golf course. And what I've said, and I said this Monday, that the procedures work, the redundancies work, so that high level of protection is working.
Paul Stango, CBS.
Acting Director, thank you very much for doing this. Two questions, just one on West Palm Beach. The busy public road that is adjacent to that sixth hole where the suspect was hiding is a well-known blind spot on that specific golf course. Why did no one within the U.S. Secret Service sweep behind that fence line for threats?
They were sweeping ahead, Nicole. So what I just explained is that that lead element was going ahead, sweeping.
But was there anyone behind the fence where the road was sweeping there to see if anyone was in the bushes?
Having been there and seen the vantage point, whether they were on the public side or the private side, the bottom line is the individual was detected.
On Butler, you testified before Congress that all assets requested for the Butler rally by Trump's detail were approved. But there are Secret Service assets that may have prevented the tragedy on July 13th, most notably a counter-assault advance team that would have surveyed the site ahead of time or enhanced counter-drone protection that might have prevented the tragedy. Were those specific assets requested by Trump's detail? If they were they denied? And if they weren't, why weren't they requested?
So the counter-assault team had an element that was there that had embedded with local law enforcement, so we had tactical elements in place. The counter-assault team leader that day had been in direct contact in the days leading up to July 13th with those tactical elements.
But just to be clear, did the Trump detail ask for any additional resources that were denied by the Secret Service?
So based on the information I have right now, the asset request, all of those assets that were asked for were approved. And so what we're looking at now is, were there any additional ones that came in through other channels? But what I can tell you, based on the information I have now, the assets were approved.
We'll go to Holmes of CNN.
Two questions. When we're talking about Florida and the idea that this was the Secret Service working as it should, does this mean that no security will change for Trump when he goes golfing again?
Well, I think what we try to do, Holmes, after every incident, we look at it. What could we have done better? We look at everything. And it doesn't matter whether there's a critical incident that occurs. So we are looking and we're reevaluating to look at, do we need? I've had conversations with Sheriff Bradshaw in Palm Beach County. And so I will leave it to the local field office to carry on those conversations about making changes. That's where I'll leave that.
And then on Butler, if we can drill down on the specific timeline a little bit. At 6:08, we know that a local radio call went out that a man was on the roof. Now, my understanding is that the state police were in a separate area with locals, and their job was to communicate any local chatter to the Secret Service. Why was that 6:08 radio call not communicated to Secret Service, or was it by the state police?
So the information I have is that we had a member of the Pennsylvania State Police in our security room, and that's what spurs that phone call to the counter-sniper response agent at 1810.
And so the state police never communicated a local radio call at 6:08 to the Secret
Service? What I'm saying is that the personnel that was in the security room passed that information, and that triggers the 1810 phone call.
Okay.
We'll go to Rebecca Beach at the Hill.
Hi. I know Congress has sounded a little resistant lately in terms of what it might do for funding for the Secret Service. Given the sort of paradigm shift that you've laid out today, I'm curious what you'll be looking for from Congress and sort of what you're seeking from lawmakers to carry that out.
Well, we've been briefing. We've been providing information. Right now, I do think that, Congress has questions. We're responding to those questions and providing them information. But at the end of the day, I think Everybody wants a strong Secret Service, and that's what I'm working towards. That's what members are working towards, and so we'll continue to have those conversations.
We'll go to Claudia with Univision.
Hi, thank you so much for doing this. Republicans in Congress, they want the same level of security than the president for the candidates. How realistic is really that? Can you be more specific on that? I know you asked, you answered that question, but can you just, can a candidate have the same level of security of a sitting president? And also, what changes are we expecting in the security area after, you know, where most of the incidents happened?
So how I approach that, Claudia, is this. The way the Secret Service is structured, the President of the United States has the highest level of protection of any world leader, period, the end. The number of assets that the Secret Service provides and the Department of Defense provides is at the highest levels. Those same highest levels with respect to the Secret Service are being provided to the former president's detail. And so when it comes to maintaining this, where we are at right now is we have finite resources. The way we are structured with some of our classified assets, with some of our personnel, and with some of our president, we've now expanded that to include the former president. And so while we can do this, it is certainly, we are burning through a lot of assets and resources. And that's the argument that we've been trying to show. This isn't some pie in the sky trying to say, hey, we want this now. We are not capitalizing on a crisis. We are showing the math. We have finite resources, and we are stretching those resources to their maximum right now, which is going to require us to replace these assets. It's going to require us to also adjust, to look at this and evaluate that if we have to do this again, or do it because of some other situation that we have no other control of, we have to be able to sustain that for an indefinite period of time. And so I am hopeful, and I am certainly engaged in these discussions, and I feel like at the end we will get there because we have no other choice.
What changes are you going to make outside of the secure area? That zone where everything happens?
The outer perimeter. So
yeah.
I think that's where we have to be very direct and clear with our state and local partners as to what we're asking of them.
Go to Joe Khalil with Newsmaker.
Thank you, Acting Director. I've got two questions. The first, it's our understanding it takes anywhere from 4 to 10 years for an agent to go through the training that rises them up to a presidential detail level. You've described a manpower issue. Given that, do you think that training time frame might change so you can expedite getting more officers to a presidential detail should you need that?
So we're not going to drop standards, Joe. We have not dropped standards. You do need to develop those agents. And when agents start, you cannot put them on the highest level protection, protecting a protectee. When they graduate from our training facility, they go to a field. They do advances. They do criminal investigations. The importance of having that what we call phase one, that's where those agents that are doing federal investigations, that are interfacing with local law enforcement, those are skills that they learn, analytic skills, how to conduct a federal investigation, how to interact with a U.S. attorney, how to interact with a state or local agency. And all the while they're doing that, they're also popping in and out doing protection, whether they're doing it in New York City for a United Nations General Assembly or they're doing an advance for a visiting head of state or world leader that comes into their field office district. That's where they cultivate and sharpen those skills, and it will take them up until probably 4 years. Ideally, that sweet spot is between the fourth and fifth year where we send them off to a permanent detail. That's where we are getting to as far as the career path. And so it's critically important that we make sure that we still develop people. It is being on the Presidential Protective Division or the Vice Presidential Detail. It is a very, very high pressure situation. It requires a lot of maturity. It requires decision making, analytic skills, and the ability to problem solve. And it takes time to develop those skills, even though we've put you through training. The more seasoning you have in the field, the better off you're going to be as far as being a protection agent.
So then how do you address the manpower issue quickly?
So right now, we've had robust hiring. This year, by the time we close out the fiscal year, We're going to hire more than 400 special agents this year. Right now, looks like we're going to have a net gain in the hundreds, triple-digit net gains, something that we have not seen in a little while. I can tell you that applications right now are at an all-time high for applicants seeking employment with the United States Secret Service. So I do believe that we are going to meet this. We have no choice. We have the 2028 Summer Olympics ahead of us in Los Angeles. The Secret Service will be responsible for the security planning of that. That is going to require a tremendous amount of personnel, tremendous amount of resources, and a tremendous amount of collaboration with state and local and other federal partners. We are going to get there. We are getting there now. We have filled all of our training classes going into this next fiscal year. So we're getting there. We have turned the corner. We're showing those metrics to Congress. And I think that's the question that they've had. And we are going to show them that we can deliver on this.
And just second question is, former President Trump has said that he is going to the Alabama-Georgia football game this weekend. Are those kinds of events particularly concerning given he could be around tens, if not hundreds of thousands of people?
So I'm not going to comment on protectee schedules. What I'll tell you is that each event is complex and each advance is different. And those advance teams, they know that what they have to do to make a secure environment for our protectees.
Thank you for doing this. You said we were now moving into the accountability phase of this Butler investigation. You did not want to discuss names of who might be punished, so to speak, but can you give us more detail, at least maybe how many people would face punishment or repercussions for what happened in Butler, at what levels of the organization those people represent? And what level of punishment, again, they may face?
So, again, I can't comment on this. This is a personnel matter that is still pending. What I will tell you is that I have not asked for anybody to retire. That was not I know some of that was reported. That is false. And with respect to the disciplinary process, it will be handled in accordance with our table of penalties. That will be led by the Office of Integrity in coordination with our Office of Professional Responsibility.
And then one follow-up as well. All this talk about making things more robust, more agents in the field, this type of thing, this is not the first presidential election you guys have had to secure. So why weren't all those moves put in place prior to this year's election?
So the former president has had robust security around him since he left office, more robust than prior former presidents.
Jackson Richmond. Thank you, Acting Director Rowe. Jackson Richmond, Epoch Times. Has security been adjusted or increased following the Florida attempted assassination attempt? After all, according to Congressman Matt Gaetz, a DHS official has warned that there are five assassination teams targeting former President Trump. The official warned that there isn't enough protection to deal with that level of threat. Are you aware of this assessment, and what is the Secret Service doing to respond?
So I will tell you, as I mentioned earlier, we, of course, are evaluating coming out of West Palm Beach, and we're having those conversations with state and locals. I'm not going to talk about unnamed sourcing or the report you mentioned. I'm not familiar with that.
And local law enforcement doesn't have the same training that Secret Service agents do. Will the Secret Service be training local law enforcement ahead of events as to prevent another Butler?
So right now we are we're actually having some very good discussions with the Federal Law Enforcement Training Center about developing a curriculum to assist our state and local partners. And you know what I'll say is some of the things that we've been talking about. Our state and local partners, and I know people have said they're not trained like the Secret Service. Men and women of law enforcement protect their communities every day. They understand how to handle a crisis situation. They understand how to respond to a violent felony in progress. They know what their jobs are. We certainly, when we ask them and enlist their assistance, we're relying on them. So I think it's important that we always try to give back to them, whether it's through training or forensic support or investigative support. And so one of the things that we're contemplating now is partnering with the Federal Law Enforcement Training Center to develop not only a law enforcement guide, but also develop a training curriculum through FLETC with a cadre of Secret Service personnel to be able to train them in the principles of advance. And that will only help them when dignitaries come to their district, or perhaps if they're protecting a mayor or a locally elected official. So we're all about giving back to them. Next month, we're going to unveil a guide on how to come up with a multidisciplinary threat assessment team that's going to be led by our National Threat Assessment Center. So we are very, very in tune with what our state and local partners, how they support us, and we are constantly evaluating what we can do to not only bolster those relationships, but give back to them.
Thank you.
Sadie Gurman, Wall Street Journal.
All right, you've been listening to the press conference. It's been going for about 30 minutes now of the United States Secret Service. You have heard Ronald Rowe, who's the acting Secret Service director, give an explanation as to what happened on both of the different occurrences. And I don't know if it's really satisfactory, but we will continue to watch and monitor the rest of this particular press conference. A lot of the questions are kind of being cyclical now. And the one thing that I have, the takeaway, is they're not talking about any sort of failure on a Secret Service agent's part, being the disciplinary actions. He's not asking anybody, he said, to retire. I assume he means to resign. There's no action taking place there. So we will wait and see if there is any retribution for the lack of protection of Donald Trump. The House of Representatives voted unanimously with those who were present to give Donald Trump and any political presidential candidate the same level of protection that the president of the United States has. That's something that has happened here as well. All right. Well, we're going to take a break. It is Friday afternoon, and we're glad that you are here with us. We're our YouTube live chat poll today. Which candidate has the momentum? Is it Kamala Harris or is it Donald Trump? We want to know what you think. You can visit us on the Annie Fry YouTube channel and let us know who you think has the most momentum currently in this campaign. When we come back, Tammy Owens of RE/MAX Alliance is going to join us to talk about an event that's near and dear to my heart, Night of Rock Stars. It's coming up soon. It's an amazing event. Learn all about it when we return. Annie Fry Show. Thank you for being with us this afternoon. It's a great pleasure of mine to welcome my friend Tammy Owens into the studio here with RE/MAX Alliance, because one of my absolute favorite nights of the entire year is the Night of Rock Stars event, which I have emceed. I think this is my third year that I have done this. Is that correct? And Brad, you've been to the Night of Rock Stars before.
Yeah, it's a lot of fun.
It's such a wonderful experience, and it's such a unique event. So, Tammy, I want to give you the opportunity to talk about kind of the genesis of where this event came from, and just really, like, how did it come to be that you were going to highlight these families who have special needs children and celebrate them all for a really, really great cause?
So many years ago, there were probably eight of us that went to an event similar, but they didn't, like, the kids just walked across the stage. So we just kind of all got together and said, how can we elaborate on this, make it bigger, make it better? And one of our agents in our office has a band. So he's like, well, what if we let all the kids get up on stage and perform?
A really good band.
Their name is Where's Dave. Where's Dave learns the child's favorite song. And it might be Itsy Bitsy Spider. It might be a Barney song, or or the Shark. What was the Shark?
Baby Shark.
Baby Shark.
Yes.
And they turn
everybody's
it into,
favorite song,
yes.
Baby Shark.
And they turn it into a rock song, and they perform it with the child. Just absolutely amazing. Not a dry eye in the area.
No.
But it's just grown from there. I think our first event we had right over 300 people, and now we're at about 800.
It's a packed room, and the tickets are sold out. So usually what I would do is have somebody on like Tammy and RE/MAX Alliance, their community team that leads this Night of Rock Stars event. And I'd be saying, get your tickets. What I need you to do is put this on your calendar for next year when they do it again, so you can get your tickets ahead of time. But there is more that can be done. And, you know, when you talk about doing a fundraising event like this, where everybody who is participating is volunteering.
Absolutely.
It it all the funds raised go to help a specific cause, and you have two entities that are the beneficiaries of this. So you're raising money. I know that you've raised very big numbers of money in the past. Tell me about the purpose, the why of celebrating these families. Who are you helping?
So our office, RE/MAX Alliance, is a Children's Miracle Network office. So it's very close to our heart. I personally had two, I have twin grandchildren that were born 3 months early. So this is just something I'm very passionate about. And so every year, our local Children's Miracle Network gets half of the proceeds from the event. And then the other half goes to a local children's charity that we choose. This year we chose Equipping the Called, they're amazing. They are completely just a charity, non-for-profit,
mm-hmm.
and they bring in clothes, curling irons, just different items that kids would need. So if a foster child is placed into a home, that child gets to go to this store and shop without anybody else there to get all the things that they need.
Tammy, that's great. I mean, hearing how many different ministries and organizations and 501c3s you affect from this one night. My question for you, though, is how do you choose the kids? Because there have to be so many parents and kids that are so excited to maybe be a part of this. How do you decide?
So they're nominated.
Okay.
A lot of the kids are nominated through past rock stars or through the agents in our office. We have a really hard time saying no.
Yeah.
So typically we choose 12 children. This year we stretched it a little bit because we had one young lady. We found out after we got her nomination that she was a little too old. So we have an honorary this year. And then we had one come in at the last minute, and we're like, we cannot tell this
kid
no.
That's
yeah.
great.
I'm so happy to be able to be a part of this event, to be able to see the joy. I mean, good grief, we talk about joy a lot, but this is the most legit. Brad, you've been to these events. You've seen the experience of having these families who are really, I mean, it is a different lifestyle to live raising a child with any sort of special needs. And the spectrum of people who are recognized, the kids who are recognized, they can be, you know, nonverbal to able to go up there and help perform the song on the stage all throughout that whole spectrum. But it takes a village to help these children be raised and to celebrate them, and this night is all about it. It's an incredibly joyful but also emotional evening.
Yeah, I like to, like, when you show up, so you're all decked out in your best, right?
Yeah.
So I've got an Italian suit that I like to wear, and we'll go out there, and there's a red carpet event, and they bring these kids in on a big limousine bus, and they let them come down the aisle on this red carpet while everybody gets their cameras out with their flashes and they're snapping pictures, and Annie's interviewing them as they're coming in, and they give them the whole rock star treatment. And then you get to see these little kids go up there, and I say little, some of these kids are, I don't know.
Teenagers.
Yeah. They go up there, and they just absolutely embrace their song, and they embody the spirit that you want everybody to have, and they just go out there and they just let it rip. They sing their songs. Everybody has a good time. People dancing on the dance floor, and there's a ton of stuff that you can, like, bid on and stuff there, too. So,
Tammy, I want to draw people's attention who are listening right now, who, obviously, like I said before, the tickets are sold out. I tested the theory here, and I'm asking you folks listening right now to follow my lead if you would, but I am leading on this. I tested it before we came on the air. If you go to nightofrockstars.com, you can learn about what RE/MAX Alliance's community team is doing with Night of Rockstars. They are a 501c3. If you scroll down, it's like maybe two scrolls down on the page. There's an opportunity to donate $20, and it's super simple to do. You can donate directly to this cause and impact the overall haul that they're able to make on this fundraiser to help these families. When you're raising, you talked a little bit about the other charity involved, but when, like, Children's Miracle Network, what kind of work do they do with the funds that you're able to raise, or what do you know about their efforts that when people do go donate that $20 to the Children's Miracle Network hospitals helping to do?
We have two Children's Miracle Network hospitals here in the area, Children's and then Cardinal Glennon. They do all kinds of things. And I've gone on tours of the hospitals, and it may be a video camera in a newborn's room where mom and dad have to go back to work, but they can log in and see their baby and talk to their baby while they're gone. It can be support care. It could be, you know, something with an animal. They do all kinds of things for each of the hospitals here in St. Louis.
I'm really excited about this year because a family near and dear to me, one of my best friends, has a child who we've watched him grow up, and he's going to be 8 maybe shortly, or maybe he just had his 8th birthday, I think. And I really have seen the strength of my friends as they have had to go through in and out of Children's Hospital. And when he was born, there were so many questions and so few answers because you just have to wait for time to pass in order for you to have the answers that you're going to need to know what treatment comes next. And then oftentimes these children will have conflicting conditions where you can treat one way, but that might affect a different condition in another way. And the resources that St. Louis has here in these two hospitals and the ability to care for these families, if you don't ever experience it up front, and I have in a secondary fashion through this family that's very dear to me, seen what is being asked of these parents to go through this, it's a lot to ask of a family. And then these families, these parents, they rise up, the grandparents, you create this village who looks out after these children. It's a lot of work. It's very tiring. They wouldn't change any of it. You know, they understand their responsibility in the situation, but a night like Night of Rockstars puts them in a community with other people who actually get it, even more than maybe the parents or the grandparents of those who are raising those kids. You empathize, you do what you can to help them, but when you put these families together of people who have a common shared existence on some level that the rest of us maybe can't understand, and then you support them this way, and it's all going to help a really good cause. I mean, it's hard for me to not, I mean, $20 at nightofrockstars.com. I think we can all pitch in and do that. It's really simple to do. It took me 30 seconds. Are there other opportunities in the future for people, if people are hearing this and it's speaking to their heart, to maybe go to nightofrockstars.com? I think there's a contact us button on there as well. Like, what other help can you use or have to make this an even bigger, better event in the future?
So obviously, nominating children. You can go on there and you can contact us through the website, nominate a child, obviously make donations, baskets. We had somebody donate like 30 baskets this year.
Oh, that's great.
Monetary, just anything, really. I mean, we're always looking for help and support with this.
Tammy, what year is this? How many years in a row now?
This is our 5th year.
Fifth, okay. So with this being such a unique event, because, you know, I've worked in Christian ministry and different radio stations. This is one of those events that just stands out, that you just remember it more. And you talk about charity things all year, and they're very good. This one just is so unique. Are there other people doing anything like this in other parts of the country that you know of?
No, and we've actually ran that kind of up with RE/MAX to say, hey, if anybody wants to do this, we will work with them and kind of create it for them.
I would not be surprised to see this become something that goes from St. Louis to nationwide, because it's just so neat.
Yeah.
All right. Well, again, the evening is coming up. It is, I think it's the 27th, is off the top of my head.
Next Friday night.
I've had it on my calendar for months and months just to make sure that I was free on it. If you go to nightofrockstars.com, you will be able to scroll down a little bit, and they just got a $20 donate button. That's what they're asking for. That's what I'm asking of you. I've done it myself, and I encourage you to check that out also, and just be a part of something that is really wholesome, that is really good. I'm constantly asking you as a listener to join me in my effort to try to reach out and help in our community and do it on our own, not have to wait for somebody to get elected into an office one way or the other in order to make a difference. We can make such a big difference without having to get politics involved at all, and it's really our responsibility to do that. And Brad, you know, like I said, this, the event in and of itself, it's just like it overflows your heart.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. Like, so you feel like you are participating in making these kids' dreams come true, which is what I always like. You feel like you're doing something good, but then you're just inspired and amazed by what they fight through, what they go through, what their parents go through. You know, it's going to sound weird, but you just kind of want to wrap up and give a great big hug to everybody that's there. And it's such a good time.
Yeah.
Such a good time.
Tammy Owens with RE/MAX Alliance and the RE/MAX Alliance community team. Thank you for coming in and talking to us about this. We love to shout it from the mountaintops.
Thank you for all your support. We really appreciate it.
Oh, you bet. It's the least I can do, and I'm glad to be able to have the opportunity to do that. Go to nightofrockstars.com, and if you're so inclined, it's probably payday for a lot of us. You got 20 bucks to spare. This is the best place you can put it on a Friday afternoon. We are thankful to RE/MAX Alliance for what they are doing and the RE/MAX Alliance community team, and go to nightofrockstars.com for more information. All right, let's get back to the rest of the business of the day. We come back. Don't go away.
Get more at 971talk.com.